Hello and welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. Oh, I'm glad you're with me. I'd go into hydropoiesis if I got exposed to the hot idea that you missed today's show. Fundraiser incentive pay. The University of Pittsburgh has created a career ladder to stem frontline fundraiser turnover, and it includes incentive pay. Explaining Pitt's innovation and helping you think through whether this makes sense at your organization are Dave D'Alessandro and Liz Cooper, fundraising administrators at the university. On Tony's Take Two, the NTC videos. We're sponsored by Pursuant, full-service fundraising, data-driven, technology-enabled. You'll raise more money. Pursuant.com. I'm very glad to welcome Dave D'Alessandro and Liz Cooper to the show. Dave is Associate Vice Chancellor for University Development at the University of Pittsburgh, and Liz Cooper is Senior Executive Director for Development at the University. Dave and Liz, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
It's
a pleasure. Dave, I'm not sure we've ever had a Chancellor or Vice Chancellor on the show before. This sounds like a very regal term. Are you a crown born there, or what? Are you sitting on a throne? Or what? This is Chancellor.
Well, associate vice chancellors are a lot like vice presidents in banks.
Okay.
There are a lot of us at the university.
Okay. But they prefer chancellor.
Essentially, I sit over all of the individual fundraising for the university, plan giving, prospect research, all the analytics, and Liz is the second in command.
Okay. It's just interesting that some places, I guess, mostly I see it in, I guess it is in universities, prefer chancellor over president. I don't know.
Right. I don't know where that
okay.
Came
I don't know. It's just.
You're right.
It sounds like royalty. All right.
Yeah.
Liz, you and I are, the plebeians? No. What is your responsibility, Liz, as senior executive director for development?
Sure. So I oversee all of the central fundraising operations. So I hire, orient, and supervise all of our fundraisers that are located here centrally. I also oversee fundraising efforts that go on in some of our smaller schools, for example, the School of Education or the School of Social Work. And I also work closely with our regional campuses.
All right. And, of course, I wanted to let you know that I'm a Carnegie Mellon alum, and our Carnegie Mellon is just down the street from Pitt, so we'll have no trouble with you, please.
We won't hold it against
and
you.
That's true. It is two against one. What am I talking about? Yeah. All right. All right, Dave, why don't you get us started? This incentive pay and the career ladder, and why was this important to do at Pitt?
I'm going to have Liz start off on that.
Oh, look at this. Already he's an anarchist. Anarchist already. Okay. This is what happens when you're dealing with a chancellor. I see. Okay. Okay. Go ahead, Liz. You start off.
You know, I think that it seemed like every moment I was checking my email, I was receiving an article or a blog about some big higher education fundraising issues. Two of which were the recruitment of major gift officers and the retention of major gift officers. During our campaign, we were fortunate to have a group of very successful and talented individual major gift officers that are loyal to the university. But as you know, when one campaign ends, you start thinking about another, and we knew we were going to grow. So we wanted to address these issues, recruitment and retention of major gift officers at Pitt, before they became a common theme to us. If that makes sense. In other words, it was a common theme across higher education, and we didn't want it to be an issue here.
And what do you see as the downside of, just to make sure everybody is on the same page with this, the downside of frequent turnover of fundraisers?
I think continuity is a big theme that you'll find in development. Continuity is good for donors. It's good for the employee. It's good for the organization. It's good for the bottom line. When an individual major gift officer leaves the university, that relationship that they developed with that individual major gift donor has to be repaired and start over again. So.
All right. So, yes, we want this continuity, and donors prefer it.
Donors prefer it. Sure, they begin a relationship not only with Pitt but with that individual major gift officer.
Yeah, for sure. Dave, if you think I'm going to bring you in this conversation, you're out of your head. So, you can hang up or whatever. I don't know. It doesn't matter to me. No, it sounded like there was something you were going to say, Dave. You wanted to add something?
Well, I think that one of the things that we learned was that it's actually less expensive over the long run to retain your existing fundraisers. Not only have you spent time training them, and we spend a lot of time training our major gift officers, but the process of recruiting, the process of matching salaries from folks coming from larger cities or larger institutions actually becomes more expensive over time. Mm-hmm. So it seemed to us that one of the things we wanted to do was to control for those problems when we were going from 11 major gift officers to probably 32. So you multiply all those problems when you've got three times more fundraisers and you've got a real problem of scale if people are coming and going. So that was a big issue for us that, once we made this initial investment, we didn't want to have to recoup it over and over again with new folks.
Liz, you said you're responsible for the hiring and training. So why don't we start with this the career ladder idea and the incentive pay around fundraiser orientation. What's different now that you have this method of evaluation and compensation?
Sure. Well, there's so many young, talented folks out there that have maybe 2 or 3 years in development. These millennials, when they came to me in an interview, would ask me, where will I be at Pitt in 5 years? Or where will I be at Pitt in 7 years? Prior to the career ladder, I would stare back at them and I would not be able to answer them, except with the simple response of, we hope that you'll still be here.
Yeah.
So, this was when this was established, this was a really interesting way for us to tell that applicant, there is a future for you here, and we have thought it through.
How long have you been doing incentive pay and the career ladder, which we're going to talk about?
So we worked on the career ladder for about 18 months, and it was implemented in January.
Oh, okay. So we're talking. Oh, wow. All right. So just 8 months or so. All right. But a lot of lead time, a lot of thought went into it. Mm-hmm. So back to the orientation question. Then, how is training of new fundraisers different now?
So a part of what we wanted to ensure was that we were orienting exceptional fundraisers. And that's really what the career ladder is based on, is really those performers that are going above and beyond a successful and being exceptional. Part of that is us training them for the first 3 months of their employment to get up and running as quickly as possible, to learn how Pitt fundraises, to learn how we do it. So we establish what we lovingly refer to as the Academy. It's a week-long intensive training, hands-on experience taught by our own staff on all the things that we think they need to know as an individual gift fundraiser. For example, they get a crash course on planned giving. They get a crash course on our endowment, making the ask, proposals, agreements, etc. So that we feel that after that week, they really do have a great base in what it takes to be an individual major gift officer here.
And what about
that,
go ahead, Dave.
I was just going to add that part of that, though, is the explanation of the career. Is the explanation of the career ladder?
Yes.
There's actually a booklet that they get that sets out all the requirements for them to, in a period of 3 years, be eligible for a promotion.
Okay. We're gonna go out a little early for a break. When we come back, we're gonna talk about what these elements are to being exceptional. There's 6 of them, and we'll talk about how they fit into the career ladder. All that, stay with us.
You're attuned to Nonprofit Radio. Tony Martinetti also hosts a podcast for the Chronicle of Philanthropy. Fundraising Fundamentals is a quick, 10-minute burst of fundraising insights published once a month. Tony's guests are expert in crowdfunding, mobile giving, event fundraising, direct mail, and donor cultivation. Really, all the fundraising issues that make you wonder, am I doing this right? Is there a better way? There is. Find the Fundraising Fundamentals archive at TonyMartinetti.com. That's MartinetiNETTI. Remember, there's a G before the N. Thousands of listeners have subscribed on iTunes. You can also learn more at the Chronicle website, philanthropy.com. Fundraising Fundamentals, the better way.
Welcome back to Big Nonprofit Ideas for the Other 95%. Liz, let's turn to you. Would you please tick off the six elements to prove that you're an exceptional fundraiser?
Sure. Well, we have the first is our fundraising visit number, dollar raised, agreements sent, agreements accepted, the total contacts that they have in our database. And the last is origination gifts.
Okay, thank you. Let's define some terms. What's an origination gift?
An origination gift is a gift that the development officer, the origination gift is a gift where the prospect was never placed in what we call active management. In other words, other universities use the term maybe a legacy or one that was kind of handed down from a previous development officer to another. Origination gifts are those gifts that were the relationship that was established by the gift officer, cultivated, solicited, and closed. So they are new giver to the university at the major gift level.
All right. And to be exceptional, you have to achieve a certain level or exceed, or how do you prove that you're exceptional across these six categories?
Yeah, if it's okay, I'll let Dave kind of handle that and what we determine to be exceptional.
That's okay. Yeah. I'll trust him. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, one of the things that the career ladder does is takes a traditional major gift officer position and breaks it into six steps. So at each step, step one, step two, step three, step four, and so on, there are a set of performance standards. The initial performance standards are considered, this is your level of competency. This is what you're supposed to be doing. And then you have the exceptional being, in terms of money raised, double that amount. And all of these other factors are not all that different at both at exceptional and regular. In other words, what we're really trying to figure out is, are you doing the baseline of activity, and how effective are you of taking that baseline and raising more gifts than the person sitting next to you? So at each level, an exceptional person is always raising double the amount of money that another person in the class is raising, or the ones. So the ones might be exceptional if they can average $500,000. If they get promoted to a two, they're only exceptional if they raise $1 million. If they get to three, they're only exceptional if they raise $2 million. If they get to four, they're only exceptional if they raise $3 million. All right. So in this system, it's entirely possible to be promoted and be exceptional as a CRM1 and never leave the CRM2 level, because you're not exceptional at that level.
All right.
So this
CRM,
is like one of the... Go ahead.
Let me just... we have Jargon Jail on Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. CRM is probably pretty widely known, but let's just make it explicit. I assume that's Constituent Relationship Manager?
Charitable Relationship Manager.
Charitable. Oh, see, I did not have it right. A Charitable Relationship Manager. Okay.
Right.
Okay. Go ahead. Sorry.
And, that's kind of where we got away from the major gift officer term, because we felt that charitable relationship manager actually is a title that expresses the job.
Yeah,
they're managing charitable relationships.
Yeah, I kind of like that, a charitable relationship manager. Okay. So do you, to be exceptional, do you have to do double the goal in all six of these categories?
No.
Okay, how does it work? What's the formula?
The formula is that, let's say you come in as what we call a CRM1. So you're a CRM1, and we tell them, here's what you need. All right, you need 45 fundraising visits, 200,000 in new pledges, 6 agreements sent, 4 agreements accepted, 1,000 total contacts, and 2 origination gifts. Now, if you are exceptional, you'll have 45 or more fundraising visits. You'll raise 500,000 more in new pledges and gifts. You'll have 6 agreements sent or more, 4 agreements more, 1,000 total contracts, and 3 origination gifts. So if you manage to make all those numbers, all right, over a period of 3 years, in other words, that's your average of doing that over 3 years,
yes,
then at the end of the third year, you're eligible for a promotion. And you would be promoted to a CRM2.
Two. Okay. What is... probably should have just defined this earlier, but what is total contacts?
Total contacts are all the things that you put in the database which indicate an attempt to maintain communication with the donor. So emails, letters, phone calls, visits.
Mm, okay, so that's pretty liberal. And then one of the categories, I think the first one Liz mentioned, is actual visits, fundraising visits.
Right.
That now, I assume that's a face-to-face meeting?
Yes.
Okay.
But here's the difference in, you know, we've had people say, boy, that number's so low, we have to make 200 visits. Well, the only way you get credit for a fundraising visit is that you have an actual discussion about a major gift. And in fact, all of our folks are supposed to call and say, I would like to come and talk to you about your philanthropic relationship with the University of Pittsburgh. So these aren't alumni visits. These aren't people you casually run into at a football game or a basketball game. We still count those, but you don't get credit. We've got a staff that actually vets all the contact reports to determine whether you get credit or not for that visit.
I used to be a planned giving director at 2 colleges before I became a planned giving consultant. Yeah, I do planned giving consulting now, but I used to be planned giving director. I'm trying to decide whether I would have loved this or hated it. I think I would have loved it because I kind of like the office competition. Although I had in both these shops, I had started the planned giving program, so there was no other planned giving fundraiser.
Right.
But I mean, I'm sure we could have worked out a way of comparing my work to that of frontline major gift officers. But
sure.
Okay. No, I think I would have. I don't know if I would have succeeded, but I think I would have liked it. I don't know. I might have been out after 3 years. Why did you? Let's turn to Liz. Liz, why a 36-month average? And also, how does that work if someone goes out on maternity leave or family medical leave or has an injury or something like that? But first, mm-hmm. why the 36 months?
We felt like a 3-year rolling average was a great way to measure exceptional performance in that you're not relying on a successful year and you're not relying on a particularly poor year either. So, for example, let's say a major gift officer has a year where they raise $1.1 million. It's a great fundraising year. Well, then, if you take the 3-year rolling average, you can't just do nothing for the next 2 years and know that you're going to get promoted. There's still work to be done. So on the flip side, if you have a year where you raise only $200,000, you still have plenty of time to make it up. So we thought that it was fair in that sense. The 36 months is what HR helped us define as active employment. So if they go on maternity leave, for example, essentially their performance cycle, these 36 months, pause. And it picks right back up in 36 months. So that's another thing that I want to mention is that we don't run on a fiscal year. For example, we run on a calendar year from the date of their hire. If they're hired on March 1st, they're judged on a 12-year cycle for year one from March 1st to March 1st. So if they were to go on maternity leave on March 1st, and then it would pause for the next 3 months, it would then pick up on June 1st, and that would be the end of their 36 months, if that makes sense.
Okay, yeah, so each person's anniversary is their date of hire.
Correct.
And right. and if there's a chunk missing for medical leave or whatever, then you would just tack on more time at the end.
You got it.
Right.
Okay. Does that trouble you at all? Or how did you think through this when everybody's got a different anniversary date? I mean, putting aside the record keeping, we'll get to that. I mean, that's ministerial. We could deal with that. But that different people have different anniversaries when their 36 months is up. Does that concern fundraisers at all? Or does it concern you?
Well, I think that they believe that that's actually extremely fair. So let's say you start in September. If you were running on a fiscal year, you've only got 9 months of performance. So at the end of three fiscal years, you actually haven't worked for 36 months. You've worked for 33 months. This way, you're guaranteed that you get the full 36 months for your promotional review. And from what I know from the folks who work here and now live under this, they love the certainty of all this. They know when they're going to be up for a promotional review, which almost never exists in any organization I worked at before, one of which was Carnegie Mellon.
Promotional review
was something that you might ask your supervisor, hey, I've been doing pretty good for 2 years. You know, when are you going to look at, you know, what else can I be? How can I be promoted? And that was always this foggy kind of answer. This way they know at the end of that 36 months they're going to sit down and they're going to be able to review their last 3 years of work.
I'm sorry you got booted out of Carnegie Mellon.
Pardon?
I said, I'm sorry you got booted out of Carnegie Mellon.
Yeah, well, they had crazy ideas.
Okay.
No.
I'm certain that didn't happen.
So
is there not a performance evaluation in interim during the 36 months?
There is. There's still an annual appraisal. And that's kind of the more qualitative way of looking at this. So each annual appraisal has five performance factors, and these performance factors are what we've identified to be an exceptional individual major gift officer. They are perseverance, problem solving, functional technical skills, interpersonal communication, and kind of most importantly, donor focus. So that it's not just about the numbers, and I would like to say that individual major gift officers tend to be numbers-driven people, and they like this career ladder because it's very transparent and it's very numbers-driven. But to us, it's not just about the numbers. To us, it's about ensuring that they're still meeting the needs of the donor, and these annual appraisals help us determine that they're still totally donor-centric.
Now, I would think that even in these annual appraisals, though, you're evaluating the reviewing with the fundraiser their performance, how they're doing.
Yes.
Time versus goal over their 36 month period.
Yep, you got
yeah.
it.
Okay, so there's that too, but also a more qualitative assessment than the 36 months, which would be that's pretty quantitative and numerical.
Mm-hmm.
The 36-month review?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh, the 36-month review. So here's how it fits together, Tony. All right, so at the end of the 36 months, so everybody every morning gets their current running total on their screen, right? So they know exactly where they stand.
Oh, my, every morning.
And
okay.
So at the end of the first year, they will get their current totals and their average. At the end of the second year, they'll get their current totals and how that averages. So they always know how hard they have to be working to get where they need to get.
Okay.
That's important because when they sit down for their promotional review, they're very well aware of whether or not they're going to make it or not because
yeah,
the numbers are there.
Right. They've seen it every day.
Right. During your appraisals, you cannot have a needs improvement in any aspect. If you get a needs approval, you will not be promoted because exceptional employees don't need to improve on one of these five aspects, right? And the biggest one that trips everybody up is functional technical skills. And one of the things that's a functional technical skill is putting accurate information in a timely manner on what you're doing. And so we just have some folks who simply can't get around to putting in trip reports, or they put in inaccurate trip reports, and so they get a needs improvement, and therefore they don't get promoted because they're not exceptional.
I see, but right. Even if the numbers are there.
Even if the numbers,
you can't need improvement in any of the five qualitative areas that Liz mentioned. All right, so what's the problem with the trip report? I mean, that used to be really valuable to me when I came back, although, you know, if you get behind, then you're really screwed because you start to forget. And hopefully you had decent notes. But okay, we just have about 2 minutes before a break. But that should be you'd be surprised how long 2 minutes lasts. What trips people up with the, you said, inaccurate trip reports? Like, how does that happen, Dave?
Well, one of the rules is that the only way you can get counted for a credit for a fundraising visit, one of the 56, is you have to enter a next task. So a lot of folks, not a lot of folks, but there are those people who go to the visit and don't think about what they're going to do next. And so over time, these people who are actually competent fundraisers, all right, they meet their basic numbers. They get a backlog of information that they owe us, and they never catch up.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
They never catch up.
No, if you're keeping up with your visits, yeah, it's hard. And plus, you know, administrative tasks and things. Yeah, I definitely, if you get, yeah, I, like I said, if you get behind and you agree. All right, would you have just a minute? Liz, what happens if I come to you and tell you I got an offer at a competing, I got an offer at Carnegie Mellon, and not surprisingly, you know, they're going to pay me 1.5 times what I'm making at Pitt. How's that fit into the career ladder?
What's kind of nice about the career ladder is that we can say to that employee, well, this is where we value. This is where we see you. This is where our standards are. And this is where we see you at Pitt. So if you feel that a move to Carnegie Mellon or to wherever is the appropriate step for you at this time, we're sorry to see you go, but this is where we value you.
Okay, this being your current salary, we're not
current level.
We're not matching. We're not matching competing offers.
No.
Right.
Okay. All right. Sounds fair. We got more coming up. Of course, we'll talk a little about the ethics of all this, and maybe get some donor reactions as well, and talk about the infrastructure you got to have. A lot more coming up. Stay with us. In the meantime, I need to talk about Pursuant, because they're a very smart company, and, well, they sponsor nonprofit radio. So there you go. That is de facto, they're a smart company. If you need more than that, they rely on data, not unlike what we're talking about with Dave and Liz at Pitt, and technology, metrics, analysis. They're not basing your fundraising on tradition and popular wisdom that gets propagated at fundraising conferences. There's too much of that around. You need to be smart and analytical and measure and then learn from what you're measuring. And that's what Pursuant is about. For instance, the Prospector platform that they have, which uses your data and, of course, supplements it with their algorithms to find your upgrade-ready donors. Who should you be spending time talking to about upgrading from $1,000 a year to $5,000 a year, or $500,000 a year, or $500,000 last major gift to $750,000 or $1 million gift this time? Whatever level you're at, whatever size your shop, they're going to apply Prospector platform and its algorithms to your data and help you find the people, target the people you should be spending time talking about with around upgrading their giving. It's all at Pursuant.com. I was at the Nonprofit Technology Conference back in March interviewing speakers. I used all those interviews on Nonprofit Radio. You've been hearing them for the past several months. We also shot video of those interviews. And now it's about time. The videos are coming online. We're going to start putting them on my YouTube channel. The first four is up already, and it includes our contributor, Amy Sample Ward, who's the CEO of Nonprofit Technology Network, which, by the way, is an excellent organization around using technology smartly in your nonprofit. And you know her. She's on every month talking about social media. So that's one of the four videos that's up. The others are previewed on my video, and of course there are links to all four NTC videos, and there are more to come because I did 25 interviews at NTC this year. So there's a lot more video to come. And that is Tony's Take Two for Friday, 28th of August, 34th show of this year. Dave and Liz, you're still with us, right?
Yes.
Still
okay.
Here.
Okay. Thank you. I know you were. Sam let me know, but I just like to just a little affirmation. Let's see. I don't know who wants to talk about this. There's not really too much, but I just wanted to make it clear because when you talk about incentive pay, I think there's a possibility that people might be thinking of the ethical considerations and constraints that the Association of Fundraising Professionals, AFP, has. And the relevant sort of passages, I guess, are that members of AFP shall not accept compensation or enter into a contract that is based on a percentage of contributions, nor shall members accept finder's fee or contingent fees. Well, there's clearly, that's not what's going on here, right?
Right. That's not what's going on. And there is no relationship between the amount of money anybody raises and their increase in salary. So this is not you did really good this year, so here's $20,000 based on 1% of your increases. This is an actual increase in their salary, their annual salary level. And HR work with us to ensure that that compensation level stayed within the university's ranges for jobs that were classified like our jobs were classified. And HR actually had no problem with this. We thought that would be a stumbling block, but they really didn't see a problem in that because, you know, the alternative is that people walk in and say, I have an offer from CMU, and it's 1.5 times what you're paying me, and what are you going to do? And in most places that I know and I've worked for, a bunch of folks sit around a table and say, well, do we want to keep that person or not? And, you know, that's basically what it's based on.
Right.
And
right.
They kick it up. And so that drives, long-term, that drives your cost over because it's not controllable. It's not predictable. And it's hard to set up long-term budgets when you say 15% of the people are going to come in and ask for more money. So what we're trying to do is say to somebody, if you... you have a career here, and there is a future that you can envision based on your performance.
All right. What has the fundraiser reaction been now since January? And either one of you who wants to comment, did it?
Well, let me talk about two examples.
Okay.
Without naming any of the schools involved, we hired someone from an Ivy League school, and she basically said that she had no idea how she would get promoted at the school she was at. She had never seen anything like the career ladder where it says, if you do these things every 3 years, we're going to look at the possibility of promoting you within the major gift class. So that made us feel really good, you know, that someone from an Ivy League school thought this was great. and we, you know, recently hired someone from a private school who also said the same thing. Now, what's nice about the career ladder is we were able to bring that person in at a 4 because she had 10 years of experience as a major gift fundraiser.
Yes. Okay.
So we're not limited to just bringing people in at 1. And when we sent the numbers over to HR, they said, well, that person fits exactly into who we defined as a 4, so we don't have any problem with that compensation. And it's actually worked out wonderfully. And most people, when we come in and hand them this booklet during the interview, they're just amazed that this thing has been thought out to the detail it's been thought out.
Has anybody, I'm going to challenge just to see on the other side, has anybody, either applicant or employee, when it was implemented, objected and departed because of it?
No.
No one's left yet.
They love it.
Okay. And applicants, yeah. Liz, as you're interviewing potential fundraisers, anybody said, I don't think this works for me?
Again, I mean, these young applicants, whether they're millennials or it's a generational thing, you know, they want to know what their future is going to be like in an organization. And so most of them are very appreciative that we've kind of thought it through. And of our existing staff, you know, the reaction has been very positive. And I think it's in large part because it's so transparent.
All right. And yes, it's clear.
Everybody
knows the standards.
The level of trust that this engenders is very powerful for, you know, a group of fundraisers.
Yeah.
And one more point on that is we've had 3 promotional reviews. 2 managed to make the jump to another level, and 1 didn't. So that's the way it goes, right?
All right, and the one who didn't, let's not say his or her name, but nobody listens to this show, so it really doesn't matter. You don't have to worry about that. Okay, so for people who don't make the... So then they're still retained at the organization?
Sure.
Yes, they're kept.
Right.
And now we're going to, in 36 months, we'll look at promoting you, the possibility of promoting you again.
No, actually, that's not the way it works. The way it works is what we do is we drop off the first year of their 3-year total, and they're then in their 3rd year again. So
I didn't understand that. What do you mean?
Okay, so the person who came up had worked here for 3 years, and he didn't make it. So what happens is we then say we're going to take all the numbers from year 1 and drop them. And now you are in your new 3rd year. So you can come up again on your next anniversary.
Oh, in 1 year. Okay.
Yeah.
So I've now finished my 2nd year, and I'm entering my 3rd because we dropped the first one off.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that's good. Presumably they're getting better. I mean, if you had a great first year and then you went down, that doesn't work to your advantage, but presumably fundraisers are improving. Not always though. You might have a spike 1 year and not be able to match it in year 2, but
right. That happens a lot.
Yeah.
That happens
a
lot.
Sure.
The other thing that's important about all this is when you move from a 1 to a 2, all your previous numbers are zeroed out. So you don't carry those successes forward in terms of the career ladder. You carry the prospects forward, but those numbers disappear. And so now you're starting from ground zero again.
Yeah.
So, you know, it seems like, oh, wow, you know, all these people are getting promoted over and over again. But in fact, they won't be, because now they've got to prove that they're exceptional at the other level. And now they have to raise more money because we paid them more. So they have to raise more money, and they have to do even better to be exceptional at that level.
Yeah. Give us a sense of what the percentage increase is from the levels. Can you do that?
Yeah, we can do that. It's I'm going to say it's between 10 and 20%.
Okay. Across all the levels, you think?
Oh, yeah.
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 Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But here's the thing. The University of Pittsburgh has given out a raise of 1.5% for the last 3 years per year.
Right. So that's 4.5% over 3 years, and you have the chance to go somewhere between 10 and 20.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. No, I mean, that makes sense. You're exceptional. You're only being promoted if you're exceptional, so exceptional people should get the exceptional increases.
Right.
Let's move to a little infrastructure, a little record keeping, a little ministerial stuff. What do you need to put in place if you're going to take this on?
Well, the first thing you need is some way to validate and verify all the information that goes into counting all these things you're supposed to count. All right, almost everybody has that What we have is we have two people who are assigned to, as I say, validate all the information that goes in. So, you know, that becomes very important. The second thing is evaluation of gifts. On some gifts, we have a sliding scale. So certain bequests, depending on the age of the person, are not going to be valued at 100%.
Yes. Okay. I was wondering about that.
So you want to be fair about these. Insurance policies that the university doesn't own are not valued at all or credited at all.
Right, because that's revocable.
Shared remainders, yep. All those things have values based on, kind of the standard way of valuing things in a campaign.
Right. In other words,
all those numbers have to be validated.
In other words, Dave, planned giving is getting screwed. That's what's happening. Because I can get lots of bequests, but bequests are revocable. And
Well,
is there an age at which a bequest would count at maybe not at future value if the person reveals the amount? Let's assume.
I think it's. Oh, I have the thing here. I got the whole.
It's
thing
age
here.
65 because they get 100%.
A lot of information.
Oh,
today,
okay. Liz just passed it on. Age 65.
Okay, so bequests. If they are over 65,
this is what happens when you're dealing with the chancellor.
If they're under 65, they get a 5% discount per year to the age 55.
Okay, that's actually pretty generous. By the way, Liz had already.
Yeah, I think so.
Liz had provided that about 30 seconds ago, but that's all right, Dave. That's pretty generous. I was thinking more like 70 or 75. Wow, so full face value for age 65. Okay, I think you're being pretty generous there. That's very nice. Now, that presumes that, of course, the plan giving donor is willing to reveal the amount. A lot would rather not. And this also puts some pressure on the plan giving officers to inquire.
Right. And, of course, they need what we call letter of testamentary intent.
Yes. Okay. It's got to be something in writing. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not discounting the fact that this remains a revocable gift.
No.
Okay. But you are discounting that on the life insurance side. You said if it's a life insurance beneficiary, there's no credit?
No, the university's name. If the insurance is owned by the donor and doesn't transfer the ownership to the university.
Right.
All right. That's the problem.
Right. The university is just named as beneficiary.
Right.
Okay. And that doesn't count. There's no credit for that beneficiary designation?
No, and I'll tell you one of the things came about is meeting with someone and says, well, you know, I'm with this corporation and I'm on the board, and so I'm going to put you in as the beneficiary for the corporation, all right? On the key man, they're not key man, but you know, they allow you to do that.
Yeah.
Boy, we've had those things just disappear when the corporation disappears. Most recently with Heinz when it was bought.
Oh, Heinz, of course, very big in Pittsburgh. Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I could see that on the corporate policy side. Okay, I guess if I was one of your plan giving officers, I would question that life insurance beneficiary designation. I mean, if I got a letter that says you're a beneficiary of my life insurance policy, and of course they share the beneficiary designation form, you don't see that as equivalent to a bequest for a 65-year-old?
No.
No. Okay. Okay. We're going to take a break, not because of that, not because of that disagreement. the break was coming anyway. You're not cut off. Don't worry. Stay with us.
Okay.
Like what you're hearing on Nonprofit Radio? Tony's got more. On YouTube, you'll find clips from his stand-up comedy, TV spots, and exclusive interviews. Catch guests like Seth Godin, Craig Newmark, the founder of Craigslist, Mark Echo of Echo Enterprises, Charles Best from DonorsChoose.org, Aria Finger of DoSomething.org, and Naomi Levine from New York University's Hyman Center on Philanthropy. Tony tweets, too. He finds the best content from the most knowledgeable and interesting people in and around nonprofits to share on his stream. If you have valuable info, he wants to retweet you. During the show, you can join the conversation on Twitter using hashtag NonprofitRadio. Twitter is an easy way to reach Tony. He's at Tony Martinetti, MARTIGNETTI. Remember, there's a G before the N. He hosts a podcast for the Chronicle of Philanthropy. Fundraising Fundamentals is a short, monthly show devoted to getting you over your fundraising hurdles. Just like Nonprofit Radio, Tony talks to leading thinkers, experts, and cool people with great ideas. As one fan said, Tony picks their brains and I don't have to leave my office. Fundraising Fundamentals was recently dubbed the most helpful nonprofit podcast you have ever heard. You can also join the conversation on Facebook, where you can ask questions before or after the show. The guests are there too. Get insider show alerts by email. Tony tells you who's on each week and always includes links so that you can contact guests directly. To sign up, visit the Facebook page or TonyMartinetti.com.
Top trends.
Sound advice.
That's Tony Martinetti.
Yeah, that's Tony Martinetti.
Nonprofit radio. And I'm Travis Frazier from United Way of New York City.
And I'm Michelle Walsh from the U.S. Fund for UNICEF.
Lest you thought that I forgot about live listener love. Certainly I did not. Well, we can't. I can't send live listener love by city and state today because we are pre-recorded. We're a week in advance. But of course, the love goes out to each live listener. I just don't know exactly where you are. Podcast pleasantries. Those listening in the time shift. Over 10,000 of you, wherever you are, whatever you're doing as you're listening. Pleasantries out to all the vast podcast listeners and those very important affiliate affections, our AM and FM stations across the country. There may be 10,000 affiliate listeners. Who knows? I don't really know. The stations don't have the PPM data. So maybe there's, I don't know, maybe there's another 10,000. Who knows? But anyway, however many, however few, affiliate affections out to our AM and FM station listeners. Liz, let's bring you back to the conversation. Is there anything more that you want to tell us about sort of infrastructure that has to be in place to make this career ladder a success?
Yeah, I think what's important is looking a little bit at your own analytics. So we talked a little bit about, you know, PITS numbers, 45 fundraising visits, 500,000, 6 agreements sent, et cetera. Those numbers were not thought up off the top of our heads or plucked from the sky. We used data from our own individual major gift officers going back as far as 15 years, individual gift officers that were that have a very exceptional record, individual gift officers that didn't, and came up with the numbers looking at the data that way. So I think it's important to tell your listeners that if they're thinking about using a career ladder as a model for individual gift officers, that it's important to kind of examine your organization and what kind of data makes sense for you, and looking at your own analytics and what those analytics tell you.
All right. Dave, anything more you want to contribute to the infrastructure question?
Well, I think that when you set this up, you have to have some set of folks who are worried about the impending review date, so that all the information is gathered together, all the information is put together, that you do this in sufficient time so that any increase in pay is cleared by HR and by your vice chancellor. You know, these big organizations, time seems to creep up on you. You'll be sitting there, and especially the first two we did after January, the place was basically more or less closed at Christmas break, and suddenly you're coming up on this deadline that you have to meet. And you've got to be ahead of that. So you have to have people who care about it and are curating the information, and then you've got to get everything in line with all the people who have to know you're going to do this, so that when the person comes in, you basically hand them a letter that says congratulations, or we're sorry that it didn't work this time. But yeah, I mean, it's not the kind of, it doesn't run on its own.
Okay, and that's actually could play into the hands of small and mid-sized shops advantageously, because they don't have different levels. They may not even have a person who manages HR. It might be the executive director taking care of HR. So you don't have to, right. You don't have to worry about getting that, I guess, that administrative buy-in. We're talking about a leaner organization. So there may be advantages there making it a little easier to create something like this. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, once you decide what exceptional means, then I think that's the big leap. Okay, what does it mean to be exceptional? And when you determine what it means to be exceptional, whether you have 3, 4, 7, 8, however many criteria you have or metrics you have, it can be managed in any size shop. But I think where it becomes difficult is where you don't really identify what exceptional performance is.
Right. And, of course, Liz, you made the point that it should come from your own data, your own analytics, not from some benchmarking survey of what's typical in organizations of your size or something like that.
That's exactly right. I mean, when we look at Pitt or if you look at Harvard, that data might look completely different. And so I think it's beneficial to look at within your own organization, because you really can't control where the numbers fall when it's your own data.
Yeah, yeah. How about approval for this? Dave, was this something that needed to reach the board or no?
Well, actually, this needed to work its way up to the chancellor's office.
Okay, chancellor, yeah.
So we started HR, and it was approved by HR after months and months of work, and then it went up to the chancellor's chief of staff, and then that's at the level at which it was approved. I was thinking that for a smaller, much smaller organization or nonprofit, this might go to the board. All right.
Yeah,
you
I was
might
wondering.
Make a presentation to board, because it has somewhat of an effect on the budget, but it's not as overwhelming as you think. And here's actually the advantage. If I have 1 minute, this is very interesting.
Oh, you have just about a minute.
All right. I'm on it. So remember that we have these folks who are scattered all the way through the year. And so from a budget standpoint, the actual amount in that year that they're going to make might be cut by 50%. In other words, the actual outlay because of when they started. So, the way it works is that we have the 3-year anniversary date for 12 people already calculated. So we can estimate, based on the numbers that we have thus far, what the cost in the budget would be over the next 3 to 4 years, which is really, from a budgeting standpoint, really valuable.
Yes, I see the value of that. Okay. All right. We have to leave that there. Liz, I don't know if you are aware, Dave volunteered you off air to accept questions that people, listeners, might have. Are you willing? are you, in fact, consenting to that?
They're more than welcome to email me at cliz@pitt.edu.
cliz@pitt.edu.
Yes.
All right. We have to leave it there. And I want to thank you both, Dave and Liz. Thanks so much for sharing everything.
Thank you, Tony. Appreciate it.
Real pleasure.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
If you missed any part of today's show, you will find it where else? TonyMartinetti.com. In fact, where in the world else would you go? Pursuant Full Service Fundraising, you'll raise airplane loads more money. And I'm not talking about those 2-seater Piper Cubs like you see in the local county airport. I'm talking Dreamliner 787s like Emirates flies, with the studio apartments in first class that have showers and double beds, filled with money. Pursuant.com. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. Janice Taylor is the... No, Sam Leibowitz is the line producer today. Who writes this copy? I wish I had an intern to blame. The show's social media is by Susan Chavez, SusanChavez.com, and our music is by Scott Stein. Be with me next week for Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.
What's not to love about Nonprofit Radio? Tony gets the best guests. Check this out from Seth Godin.
This is the first revolution since TV 1950 and Henry Ford 1920. It's the revolution of our lifetime.
Here's a smart, simple idea from Craigslist founder Craig Newmark.
Yeah, in sites or in presentation or anything, people don't really need the fancy stuff. They need something which is simple and fast.
When's the best time to post on Facebook? Facebook's Andrew Noyes knows.
At traffic is at an all-time high around 9 a.m. or 8 p.m. So that's when you should be posting your most meaningful posts.
Here's Aria Finger, COO of DoSomething.org.
Young people are not going to be involved in social change if it's boring and they don't see the impact of what they're doing. So you got to make it fun and applicable to these young people, because otherwise a 15 and 16-year-old, they have better things to do. They have Xbox, they have TV, they have their cell phones.
Amit Dar is the founder of Idealist.
It took 2 or 3 years for foundation staff to sort of deign to add an email address to their card. It was phone. This email thing is weird. And plus, why should I give it away?
Charles Best founded DonorsChoose.org.
Somehow they've gotten in touch, kind of offline, as it were.
Yeah.
And they'll do exchanges of brownies and visits and physical gift.
Mark Echo is the founder and CEO of Echo Enterprises. You may be wearing his hoodies and shirts. Tony talked to him.
Yeah, you know, I'm a big believer that it's not what you make in life. It's you know, it's how you make people feel.
This is public radio host Majora Carter.
Innovation is in the power of understanding that you don't just, you just put money on a situation and expect it to heal. You put money on a situation and invest it and expect it to grow.
And savvy advice for success from Eric Saperstein.
What separates those who achieve from those who do not is in direct proportion to one's ability to ask others for help.
The smartest experts and leading thinkers are on Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%.